Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. And today I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the team, the EV Cafe team, and I've got the lovely John Curtis. I was trying to think of your middle name to give you an initial, but, you know, like JFK or something, but you're JC.
Let's go with William, shall we?
John William Curtis.
I know.
J.W. Curtis.
Indeed. W.C.
A bit of a downgrade from J.C., right? But every week we get an innovator, pioneer, collaborator in our industry. And, hey, listen, we have got the Chief Marketing Officer, Lisa Thomas, from Motability Operations, everybody. Welcome to you, Lisa.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
What do Motability Operations do, and what do you do within the organisation?
So Motability Operations was set up to run the Motability scheme, and that is the scheme that operates the lease for disabled people. It was set up almost 50 years ago, and it was really set up to address a market failure where the conventional market was failing to find accessible and affordable cars for disabled people. We work to provide disabled people with vehicles as part of a scheme, and I can talk a little bit more about that, which will enable them to access work, education, healthcare, and of course, vitally, connecting with them to like completely life-changing independence and freedom, as I'm sure those of you who are familiar with it will have seen through our customers.
Do you know what? I love what you guys do. And so I had the privilege of working I used to work for Mercedes-Benz way back in the day in vans, of course. So you take vans and do something truly wonderful with them. And I know it's part of the charity side of the Motability Operations business, but it's the sort of drive from wheelchair, which is truly life-changing for the people that you do. It must be a real thrill.
It is. And wheelchair accessible vehicles are part of our fleet. And we work with manufacturers, as you talk about, and converters to develop vehicles that customers can access in their wheelchairs. So they're either side access or rear access. I have had a reasonably long career in marketing, and I joined MO in part because of the transition to EV and the... I've done quite a lot of work in the car industry from a marketing and communications point of view. So I was interested in this huge transformation that is going on. But I was particularly interested in our customer base and how we can better support disabled customers, both through the incredible work that we do every day, all the team do, through... just giving them access to vehicles. It is such a life-changing thing. And when you get to speak to customers and you remember every day what you do, it is a great thing.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europe Car, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europe Car's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
You touch so many people in your world. My neighbour, Ian, had a stroke 10 years ago and was unable to walk. He lost the use of one leg, one arm, could barely speak, and his recovery was driven, and I mean this absolutely, by the opportunity to get back into a vehicle again. He wanted to recover so that he could drive again. It was that important to him. And You have helped facilitate that. He's had three cars within the scheme and it has changed his life. It's enabled him to continue to be a professional man, do his job, get to his work, go and see clients. And without you, he'd have been stuck. You have been such a focus. And I don't think as a society, we quite get the scale of the number of lives that you touch. How many people do you support with vehicles?
Well, our current fleet is over 800,000. So right now we've got 800,000 cars on the road supporting our customers. And I think it's really interesting what you say. We've just done some videos with customers and I've just watched one with a guy called John, who is ex-forces. And he really, and obviously he emphasises the importance of being able to get around, but the importance of being able to do it by himself and having that independence and that sense of identity is just so critical to what the actual vehicle delivers. It's unbelievable. And even those customers who were in wheelchairs, they are still able to get around by themselves. Very early on in my time at MO, I watched a video of a young woman getting her first car. She must have only been in her early 20s. And the biggest thing for her was she didn't have anyone driving the car for her. She could get in her car and leave her parents behind and go and live her life. And it was so symbolic for her. It was, you know, it's very moving. And you're right. People don't understand it. People have no, unless they know someone, have a family member or are disabled themselves, they don't understand either the disability and what that might mean in terms of their overall life, the cost of living, but more importantly, the sense of dependence all the time. It's like getting old and losing your independence, but for some people, from the moment they're born.
And at the moment, we're going through quite a stormy time politically where we have people who perhaps have a jaundiced view of the work that you do, don't understand the difference that you make to people, and are saying, you know, Motability Operations is not meeting the needs of your customers. And my feeling, and it's a personal feeling, is they are ill-informed. They do not understand the impact that this scheme has had over 50 years. How does that feel to you? You know, because you're coming under quite a lot of pressure. And as a marketeer, you're somebody who, you know, deals with every aspect of the business. Is that tough for you?
Yeah, I think it's really tough. It's tough for me personally, and it's tough for our teams, and it's tough for our customers to hear. I think it's been a very difficult time. But what has happened and has happened in the past is you may remember the sort of welfare reform announcements that were made around March time. And it just led to increased attention on the scheme. And as happens, people find the negatives rather than the positives. It's, you know, talking about how life-changing the scheme is isn't necessarily a good news story. So it has been really hard and people are not as informed as we would like them to be. We spent over the course of the existence of the scheme, there have been differing views about whether we should be a very well-kept secret or whether we should talk more about what we do. And we've really just started on our journey, the videos we were talking about, but this has come, you know, as we're still telling, you know, starting to tell our story a bit more. Obviously, we talk actively to customers, but we haven't been super active in wider media.
I'm curious about our mindset here in the UK, because I don't think the rest of the world is quite as negative as we can be. Now, I understand some of the backdrop issues around, you know, the abuses of the welfare system. I get it, right? It is a high on the agenda topic. But here we are delivering life-changing difference. And you know, having seen that personally and spoken to people, I came to The Move conference, where the vehicle Evita was on show. Now, for those of you that don't know, the vehicle Evita is a completely concept vehicle, but it was designed working with, I think, people that have, you know, been in wheelchairs, getting them into the part.
Yeah, with our customers.
Yeah, with getting them into the part of the vehicle that they want to be able to ride in, almost alongside of, you know, other occupants. Whereas historically to date, they've been at the back. And I've talked with the people that are directly benefiting from the amazing work that this scheme does, both in the vehicle development, but also in just kind of providing vehicles, as John outlined there. But we still focus on a tiny, minuscule percentage of people that abuse such privilege and such opportunity, as we do, you know, we have in the welfare state. What do you think, and Lisa, this is a, you know, a big sort of helicopter view. Why do you think we're so damn negative in this country?
Oh, that is a big question. I think we are often predisposed to being negative. We often start with the negative things and rather than the positive things as humans. I think we like a story, but I also think I don't want to get drawn into like a big conversation about economics, but no one's feeling very well off at the moment. And it is easy to target people that you see as receiving something that you can't get that you might want. And I think there is a very strong sense of people feeling down and looking for new outlets, both to criticise and, without getting drawn into politics, new evolving political parties to join as a result of that, creating new hope. My personal view is, you know, to then find a group of people to victimise as part of that, who are already disabled, cost of living for disabled, the cost of providing for your disability is already higher than those of us are able-bodied, sort of being very ableist about it and ignoring the struggles is easy to do. But going to your, I guess, your misuse point, I mean, like, rest assured that we have a team of people looking at misuse. And to your point, Paul, it is a tiny number. I think we investigate about 50,000 cases a year. Wow. And we remove or warn about 9,000 customers in the course of 2024. So there are people removed from the scheme who do misuse it, and we're alive to it. But it's like 0.5% of people on the scheme. Our customers are alive to it. You know, I see sometimes in on Facebook comments that they're disappointed when they see people misusing the scheme. But they recognise that for them it is a great scheme, and the percentage that do it, they wish they didn't. We all wish they didn't. Really enjoy the benefits of the scheme. So I do think that it's easy to get distracted by the sexy story to tell in the press.
Yeah.
The story that isn't sexy at all, it's actually very negative and often unkind, to never mind MO in that, to the recipients of the vehicles.
The sexy story, of course, is the positive. The sexy story is
exactly
that you make a difference to individuals. And yeah, and as a marketeer, we both know, I'm trained in marketing as well, and we both know that engaging emotions is absolutely central to getting your message across. And as you work through Motability Operations, are there people that you can call to mind that you've helped, that where you've had an emotional response, a positive response to the work that you do?
Lots. There are lots of examples. So Evita, that you mentioned earlier, Paul, is has been a great story. The new Kia EV5 has been influenced by that. Mm-hmm. So we are hoping that will go into production. I think you probably met our customer at Move, mm-hmm, who was there, yeah, talking about the vehicle and how, I mean, she obviously it's not in production yet, so it's not hers, but how game-changing that will be. And developing a vehicle in conjunction with customers has been super exciting for us. Obviously, we can't go near the production of it, but being involved in the design and the concept of it is amazing and has been really exciting. We get positive stories, you know, every day. We run a thing called the Motability Scheme Live, which is an event for our customers. This year we run it. We will have run it three times in Birmingham at the NEC, in Harrogate, and in Belfast this year. And you know, people come along. Our customers come along, thousands of them, over the course of the weekend to test drive. A lot of them are test driving EVs now and are interested to try and see what their future with an EV might be like. But the stories they tell about, just getting there. They meet friends each year. They use it as a way of meeting and making connections across the country. And the stories are great. So we do make a difference. And every day, just little things, making sure that the RAC are there to by the side of the road when needed, making sure that that customers can access, whether that's digitally or over the phone, skilled people who can answer their queries. It's really heartwarming.
Yeah, it's incredible that the community, we're bringing together the community. I mean, it's something that we stand for very much in the EV Cafe community, or in the EV Cafe is the creation of community. But also, you mentioned there that they're getting the opportunity to try EVs. Now, you know, there's a lot going on in the world of EVs. We haven't really touched on that at the moment. But I imagine that there's both justified nervousness, but also an embracing of this. Because I guess one of the bigger forms, and I don't know your numbers, but I know personally somebody that suffered from asthma was able to access the scheme because their asthma was as severe as it needed to, or as it was, that they needed assistance in terms of getting around. So they were obviously able to get around with a car, which is fabulous. But that car at the time was contributing to the problem. Of course, EVs don't contribute to the problem of air quality. So I'm sure there is a proportion of your users that are embracing the scheme because an electrification. There's also a nervousness. First of all, how many electric vehicles do you have on fleet? If you know that number, I know it's a reasonable size, but also what's the general feeling towards that?
So we have in excess of 100,000 EVs on the fleet.
Wowzers!
Yeah, across, you know, a 3-year lifetime.
Yeah, so, but there's still some number, isn't it? Yeah.
One in four yeah. EVs that are currently bought are for Motability operations.
There you go. Wow. Huh. JC's very informed.
We read it on the news a couple of weeks ago. Yes. Thanks for paying attention.
I know. It just goes in, stops for about 10 seconds and moves on. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are, and perception among customers really mixed. Customers that have an EV absolutely love it. There are definitely, as you see people coming into their releasing window for their next vehicle, starting to test drive, starting to look, starting to consider. But they are, and there are people who often, less to do with their disability, but I can come on to that in a minute. More to do with things like not being able to charge at home have become barriers for them. So sometimes they're just quite practical. And sometimes I think that we have been, because of the challenges our customers face ensuring that they are out and about and independent, we are obviously trying to think through the barriers to getting into an EV. And let's face it, the general population are not super keen on EVs. They're not flocking to an EV. But we have launched this year what we're calling the Electric Vehicle Transition Tracker. You've probably seen a copy of it, both of you. And this In September, we launched our second edition of it. In the first edition, I'm probably not going to get the exact stats right, but the absolutely staggering thing for us was, there were two things. One was a bit of a north-south divide, which is talked about quite a lot, and it being quite a London wealthy thing. That seems to be shifting over time from the data we have. But the other thing that was really interesting and shows a lot of potential is most people haven't seen, been anywhere near, touched an EV. And actually just being a passenger in an EV significantly increases an individual's desire, interest, and starts to unlock barriers, even if they don't drive it, even if they don't know that much about it. So I think that's really, really interesting and really positive. And then, you know, in the recent tracker, we unearthed that only 42% of the general pop feel positive towards EVs, and 45% agree they won't switch to an EV until there's no choice of our customers. So that's quite stark. Of the general pop, it's 45%. For our pop, it's 63% are reluctant to switch. So there's quite a lot to do. And where we find the opportunity and where we're focusing our efforts, such as we are able, obviously we are there just to support our customers rather than, you know, actively select vehicles for them or anything. But it's about giving them the information is really where they have home charging. So the barrier remains out of home charging, both from a cost and availability and an accessibility point of view. So that's been an interesting journey for us. And it's, you sort of see it anecdotally, don't you? People, when you get your first, and you get your EV, people always say, oh, how do you charge it? And so that inevitably is an issue for our customers. So we're looking to support in that area.
I'm interested, Lisa, in you, the person, as opposed to the job that you do. And have you always worked in areas where there's social value, where you've wanted to deliver something that made people's lives easier, better?
I mean, I'd love to tell you that I have. I think that's why I'm drawn to the job I was drawn to it and still am, because I have. No, my career has been, I guess, up until now, quite commercially focused. I've spent a lot of my time in advertising, working in advertising agencies, and for those of you who've got a bit of a marketing experience, you'll know that advertising agencies are ruthlessly commercial, as well as creative. We always like to identify and work with smaller charity clients, pro bono work, and very much enjoyed that. But no, this is my, and also I'm very big, passionate supporter of gender equality and other women, and supporting them. And have been across my career. I'm one of the very few women that is very happy to elevate rock stars, male or female, and have had I've worked with lots of incredible women and been able to support them in their journeys. And I'm reasonably familiar across the sort of what you might call the DE&I protected characteristics. I had never done any work and had no awareness of disability. So no awareness of it, no personal experience of disability. And so it was that I found really fascinating, particularly in the context of the car market, where the opportunity for changing people's lives is so huge.
So it's interesting though, Lisa, I'm you know, your background, you're obviously as creative as you are commercial, and you're obviously passionate, driven. How did this person come about that we find before us? A long career at really quite high levels, you know, from early doors, you stepped into the world, it seems, from your LinkedIn process, quite high up the chain and or quickly elevated up that ladder. What is it that your experience, you know, perhaps through school or in your younger life, that forged this steely person that has real creativity and leadership, but also that compassion that's driven the role today?
I mean, that's very kind of you, and thank you. I feel a bit humbled by that. I think probably my mum, if I'm honest. A bit me, in that I'm quite a restless person and I like challenge. I have a thing where I don't seem to be afraid of things. I don't seem, maybe I'm just, I don't have any risk radar, but I've had opportunities that I've taken, which I've just gone for. And so I think that must be something in me. You know, I left a good grad trainee job at De La Rue to go into direct marketing, which turned out to be like the best possible thing I could have done, because we've ended up in a world of data-driven customer closeness and understanding, which traditional agencies didn't really understand, and the kind of world of the internet and performance marketing and that sort of world. But I had no idea. I was just driven by the fact that I thought it would be interesting. At De La Rue, I don't even know if you know who they are, but they're security printers. And so I was, I did a grad program, and then I was working as the UK-based desk for South America and North and French-speaking Africa. And so I was writing creative briefs for banknotes. And so I sort of leveraged that as my hook into my interviews in direct marketing. So I've definitely got a natural curiosity, and I tend not to be. I've made quite big leaps, and I think that must be to do with a high risk tolerance, because I don't think it's all about chutzpah and you know, massive amounts of self-confidence. So I think it must have something else. And then I think I grew up on the Wirral. And for anyone out there from Liverpool or the Wirral, it was a very positive experience, but it was quite parochial. And I found people staring into my life and judging rather than letting me be who I am, uncomfortable. And I wanted to leave there. And so from the moment I left university, I never lived back there. Obviously, I still have family there and I go back there and I love it. But I think that is part of it, that sort of drive to try new things, be able to express myself and then be creative. But my mum was very much, she gave up her career, was a housewife, brought us up, and she very much instilled in me this sense of being independent. And she died when I was in my 20s. And I think both not having her in my life and what she taught me is also part of that, I think. That got a bit heavy. No. But in a way, that sort of momentum carried on. I founded and ran Leader for just over 10 years and then moved on to run M&C Saatchi, which I tried to make a natural progression, but wasn't really, because inevitably new challenges come in, and running an advertising group, well, the advertising group in the UK was a different challenge than running my own agency. And then obviously I went to Virgin to lead the brand there, and now at MO. But I mean, I had no idea when I took the job. But somebody said yesterday in a meeting, maybe it was in a conversation with friends, we were talking to someone very new in her career. And she said, yeah, but the job isn't what they said it was going to be. And I said, oh, that's working in advertising. And then I said, actually, it's not. It's every job you go to. The job is never quite like it says it's going to be on the job description. Or and when you get into the company, it's quite often really different. And quite often they've already pivoted by the time you arrive. But I had no idea what going into what is effectively, well, it is a private office, but is effectively a private equity business. I knew that. I had no idea what that would mean for me as a person, for my skill set, and how we would all work together. Well, you know, I learned quickly, but you know, that first year, whilst fascinating, I had no idea. But I enjoy the challenge, I think. And I love people. And I've met some incredible people as a result of the journey I've had.
That's coming through loud and clear. Loud and clear. One of the things that fascinates me about you is that you've had some extremely senior roles in your business. And so you clearly have demonstrated a capacity and capability for a workload and for delivering on objectives. You've been challenged in getting just this recording done, in that there were technical challenges that we've had, and you have always remained calm, polite, smiling, patient. How on earth do you remain this fabulous, warm human being who's got sometimes the weight of the world on your shoulders, trying to deal with all of these different corporate objectives, and remain that kind, decent person that we've seen over the last few weeks as we've tried to set this call up?
Well, again, very kind. I think my husband would probably say he doesn't recognize the person you're describing. We'll have to ask him later. I think I am quite good under pressure, and quite sort of internally resourceful. But I think as you grow older, I remember very clearly at Leader, speaking to somebody in my team, a woman called Tony, and she was showing me some work we'd done for BA. And I started in my feedback with what I thought had gone wrong rather than what had gone well. And otherwise I thought it was an absolutely brilliant piece of work. And she said, you know, it'd have been so nice if you'd started with the positive. And that has stayed with me forever. And I don't always get it right. No one always gets it right. But I think I try and put where you're sitting or the other person is sitting before what I need and what might be in my head or a sense of frustration. I don't always get it right. There are definitely people in my team at MO who would say, oh God, she didn't handle that well, or she was very ruffled. But I am quite good in a crisis, and I do try and think how other people would, I'd like, you know, how you like to be treated yourself. It's that old adage you know, treat other people as you'd like to be treated yourselves.
I'm curious about what you see, because I think to be in advertising, yes, you're reflecting on what is there in front of you. And to be in marketing, you are taking something that exists and maybe celebrating it. I'm not a marketeer, as you can probably tell. But for me, is it something around seeing ahead to the future? And, you know, for me, I know that there's a big pool of people that are able to take advantage of the Motability scheme and are not. So I think it's well into the, you know, up towards 1.5, maybe even nearly 2 million people that would be able to access the scheme. How do you see the future, both for the scheme but also for the sector?
So the whole principle of the eligibility is probably worth me touching on for a second. I think your numbers are broadly right. We take about a third of the eligible base, but the eligibility has nothing to do with us. The customers that join the scheme are eligible for the higher rate or enhanced PIP, personal independence payment, but only about a third of people who get awarded that benefit, that is done by the DWP, that is not done by us, then take up the scheme. It's entirely their choice then where they use that benefit on a vehicle. They may well choose to use it on public transport or on other items they might need for their disability. So sort of size and scale of the scheme is not really in our gift. That is just a natural process of eligibility and then selection. I hope that the scheme continues to flourish and be and deliver everything we do now to ensure that our customers remain mobile so that they can live full lives, be independent, and they can access, you know, vital things like education, work, and healthcare. You know, some of it is very practical, the things they need their vehicles for, and some of it is more about being able to see their friends. You know, the joy you see in people being able to see their friends. In terms of the future, I don't think, I mean, at the end of the day, we're recipients of customers who choose to come to us, and we are here to provide them with affordable and accessible vehicles, and that sits at the core. They do get access to a package of insurance and roadside to give them the comfort that they need, that they can stay mobile. And certainly our plan is to continue to be able to offer that with electric vehicles. We're doing quite a lot of work to support the electric vehicle transition, including looking at things like cross-pavement charging. Been doing some work in that area with Curbocharge, and they're looking to, as a result of some work, looking at an accessible product called Curboglide. So that sort of thing is like very much part of our future. How can we think about making electric vehicles more, even more affordable through thinking about connected home and connected to grid? I know they all feel quite far away, but we're already starting to think about that. And we've done some trials recently on looking at, which we're now turning into a policy actually, is looking at battery life and getting working with our dealers. We haven't talked about it, but we sell our vehicles from the scheme back into the used car market through various means, but to dealers and through auctions. And we have been doing a trial where we are asking dealers to look at the battery life and feedback on where it is after 3 years. The scores come back consistently high, no complaints of it dropping below, I think the score is 8. So we're now going to look at how we can continue to monitor that battery life and make it into a policy that we will monitor that. So one, I think it's a little bit further down the list than out of home charging as a worry for customers, but it is still a concern around battery life. They're very linked to people's like general worry about getting into an EV.
But what your work has done, Lisa, is that it's shown that dealers are more likely to take on electric vehicles, knowing that you are giving that guarantee that if they're not at 90% state of health, then they can return them. We ran a news story about it last week. It's still fresh in my mind. You are setting the benchmark for the used market. And that's the thing that I wanted to kind of conclude with. You are not just providing a service to people, which is vital, but you are setting the bar for thought leadership in our space. How do we charge vehicles for everybody where there isn't off-street parking? And it is a heck of a piece of work to do to challenge the current status quo. You do that every minute of every day. And I can't thank you enough for the work that you do. And I don't benefit directly from any of it, but my goodness, tangentially, what you do makes a difference to every single person in this country. And it's remarkable. That said, I'm fascinated about you as a person. When you finish all this thought leadership stuff and you finish all of the really big stuff that you're delivering, how do you chill out? How do you relax? What do you like to do?
One of my punishments is I'm part of a boot camp. I live in Kew in West London, and so I go to boot camp. I try to go to boot camp 3 times a week, and if I miss that, I go to HIIT classes at the gym. But I also do some reformer Pilates. I like to go to the theatre. I like to hang out with my mates. I read quite a lot, and hang out with family. I've recently become a step granny, so new family interests as well.
You are just a machine, aren't you? You just, like, wow.
That was just a whole life there, but just to relax. I mean, my gosh. Oh, dear.
But yeah, so that's what I do to relax. I just want to clarify, because I know you know, but I was not very clear on the battery health thing. It is 90%, and what we did and what we're making our policy is that if we fail to hit the 90%, we'll take the vehicles back and refund. So it's a sort of very hard, it's a hard metric that we have set, and hopefully that will give, to your point, other people, whether that, you know, whether there are customers or not, more confidence in that transition to EV, because it will be very difficult. I think there still isn't a realization that we are going to need to take an EV going forward, and for everyone, and we're trying to help our customers, but hopefully that has some benefit for the wider population.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what I've been constantly impressed by is the attitude and mindset and probably a recognition of responsibility that comes from Motability Operations, in the way you recognize that there are a lot of challenges with the transition to EV, but you're supporting many new companies that are coming to market with solutions for problems. Obviously, the solutions for problems that meet the need of your particular cohort. But, you know, you are really constantly trialing things. You know, I know that you've worked with, a number of small companies across the last few years, really to champion what they're doing, but also what they're doing and how it helps your fleet. Is there sort of a real sense of responsibility about the next generation and about, you know, that learning within Motability Operations?
Yeah, massive. So one of our big things, I get, goes back to your question about in the future. Like, we're very focused on being sustainable into the future. This is about multiple generations. It's not about today. And so our mission is about really balancing the transition to EV, making the transition viable, but doing that in a way that makes us sustainable. And in order to do that, we need to partner with other people. The core of our scheme is about partnerships. Our in-life services are all done with the support of other companies, Direct Line Group, the RAC, and obviously the dealer network and manufacturers. Manufacturers work with us to make sure that we have affordable vehicles on the scheme. And that sort of spirit of partnership and how we solve things, we can't solve everything because we have a very clear mission in what we do every day. So working with other people and innovating has been both exciting for us, but also really, really important. And I think, you know, one of the things I have become as a result of this job is just thinking about accessibility by design, accessibility first. You know, that there is no detriment to starting to think about how you make something accessible going forward. Often, if you think about charging cables, it makes them lighter. We've enabled product that's been able to carry in one hand rather than having, you know, you see disabled people in their wheelchairs carrying heavy, whether it's a petrol pump or a charger, carrying heavy. Why would it not be better for everyone for those to be
exactly
lightweight?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So I've become very passionate. We sponsor the British Wheelchair Basketball team, and, you know, talking to them about, you know, their experiences traveling around the world, playing basketball in different countries, and the barriers that are there from an accessibility point of view are staggering.
Yeah. Gosh,
that's what we're there to change.
Indeed. And I sort of look back because many years ago, I applied for a job at Motability Operations when I think I was at Mercedes-Benz. I didn't even get an interview. How very wise. Somebody was very astute there in the business. They went, oh, there's that Kirby fella. Don't want him. Right, move on. But because
rest assured I wasn't there.
But I recognise that being within Motability Operations, for us that are in have been in the automotive sector, and I actually once sold cars, the car things. I hate to confess because obviously I'm a van geek now, but I did actually sell cars. Anyway, hang on, I just need to go.
There's nothing wrong with selling cars or selling anything.
For me, there was. You're absolutely
okay,
right.
Okay, but they were the only things you could sell at the time.
That was true. That was true. And so I wanted to be in Motability Operations because, the car trade has always had a sort of a slightly negative perception in salespeople. They're up there with estate agents and other people like that. You know, and they're all good people, and we know this, but reputationally, they weren't at the highest spot. And so I wanted to aspire to do something good, and that was Motability Operations, or Motability, as I think it was called at the time. But it was fabulous. But, Lisa, we have an important thing to do. So it is called A Closing Tradition. Now, there wouldn't be any kind of podcast in the world without a credible one without a closing tradition. And of course, we have one.
Okay.
And this closing tradition, and this is, I love the curiosity, the leaning in, says that you've never listened.
Yeah, no one warned me about the closing tradition.
Says that you've never listened to one of our podcasts. So that's lesson.
I haven't actually.
There you go.
No. So I've got two crosses actions. Against my name.
Two actions.
I didn't friend
to take.
You on LinkedIn, and I haven't watched a podcast.
Two actions for your future. Next.
Not all the way through. I have watched it, but not all the way through.
Clever. I like that. That's a clever duck around. So it is.
You can decide now whether to believe me or not.
It is the Evie Cafe magic wand. There you go. So this is coming your way. It's fresh with a little lightning bolt, obviously, to represent the electrification of transport. But the magic wand is coming to you, Lisa. It's over the airwaves. There you go. There you go. You got it. There it is. And it's even more magic because it's now invisible. I mean, how magic can a wand get?
Harry Potter, eat your heart out.
Exactly. What does he know? But I'm handing that to you, Lisa, so that you have the opportunity to have a wish. And as you look out in your world, what would be that one thing that you would love to do? And, we've talked about a myriad of things, and what I sense about Motability Operations in particular is that you guys are just getting it done. And that was getting it done, nothing else. Getting it done. And that thrills me. But maybe there's something that you think, do you know what, I'd love to change this or do that or whatever. I will say that we have had somebody want a personal chef. But we've got world peace is sorted, so don't worry about that. But anything that you...
But this is in my world, though.
Yeah, in
the
world.
MO
let's
world.
Let's go with your world here.
I mean, a private chef would seem inappropriate to me in my world. I might quite like it at home, but it would feel inappropriate. There's a couple of things that I would want on my wish list. One is solving for WAVs in the future. That would make a massive difference. Wheelchair accessible vehicles and ensuring a future for them, which we're starting to do and making some progress. I think, though, that most and directly in my world, which might seem both achievable and not really enough to wave a magic wand for, I think it would be ensuring that we were well understood and bringing all external audiences, not necessarily completely into our intent and understanding everything, but understanding that what we do is good and changes people's lives, and that's important.
Well,
that's what I would.
Well,
and I don't think it sounds easy because it's my job, but it isn't that easy because you both know getting people to listen is quite hard in the first place and read what you communicate. But that is what I think that is what I would like to be able to do. for MO and for our customers.
Well, it sounds to me...
And for the wider population, help them understand what a great thing we do.
Yes, it genuinely is. And listen, if anybody has any doubt, just call me. Just because I've seen it firsthand. I remember turning up at a business about 2 years ago to deliver some training, and I walked up and I noticed a vehicle, and I could see it had been converted. I could see it was wheelchair accessible. And then I came in and it was actually a drive from wheelchair vehicle, you know, with all the controls in there. And it thrills my heart to think that somebody in that business that it's parked outside of that has driven up to that business, got out of their vehicle for in their wheelchair, gone into work, all because the scheme of Motability was thought of, you know, giving them freedom and just the ability to go and earn a living and all of that good stuff. It was fabulous. It just encourages my heart every time. John, it's pretty damn cool, isn't it?
I'm constantly surprised by the level of our guests, not their professional achievements. Those are magnificent across the piece, but it's about the human being. It's about the person who rocks up, as Lisa has, and has such a great deal to deliver, yet remains generous, kind, smiling, humorous. And you just think, do you know what? This is a machine who could just blast through stuff and just be focused on objectives. But you do it in a way which is just so personable. And I often reflect on the brilliance of people in our world, and we do focus on the negative and we do focus on the things we can't do. And every time I speak to somebody like you, and especially you today, I realise that not only do Motability Operations have a great professional, they have a real role model in you.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you. That's very kind. And I'm obviously hoping that this podcast is going to add to my little wish list from my magic wand.
Absolutely.
Going out into the ether with the two of you.
Let's hope so.
Both being very lovely champions of me, but more importantly, of the scheme and the work that we do for our customers.
Yeah. And listen, we have a great privilege of being, you know, fans of Motability Operations, but to be able to have this conversation. And you know, you're a tremendous example for many women out there, but for, you know, because I know that that's a particular thing that you would love to be. And I would absolutely point women with aspiration in your direction to show, you know, the art of the possible, right? You know, you've really led from the front, from early doors. And there's so much to celebrate in Motability Operations. We could do it all over again, but... Everybody, if you want to check out more podcasts, I mean, I know this has been very fulfilling and satisfying. There's many others out there, over 130 of them. It's quite exceptional and just a real privilege to be able to have these conversations, as John has said. So check out those on the evcafe.org. Have a look at Motability Operations. So head over there and check out Lisa on LinkedIn. She won't accept your friend request, but, you know, just...
Let it go!
Oh, but no, we're just kidding. She will, of course. And you'll see everything you need to know about Motability Operations. Be informed. Learn the truth about the great scheme that is Motability Operations. And until next time, everybody, have a great day.